This is WHTC in Holland. Time now for Talk of the Town, the program in which you, the listeners, participate with your telephone calls. Our number here, 395-1450. This morning, our guest is Lee Fisher, one of the men from the prosecutor's office. Good morning, Lee.
Good morning, Jim.
And he is here to talk about legal things. And if you have a question as we go along, you feel free to call us here, 395-1450. All right, Lee, let's get started. We were talking before the program about the new program that is hopefully being instituted here in the court system, right?
Yeah, it's a new program for our area. It's been around since about 2009, and it's called the Canine Advocacy Program. And what this is, it's a program that provides a service of support for child victims in the court system. And generally what we do is when children are the victim of crimes, there's a lot that goes into getting them ready and prepared to go to court. And there are meetings that will take place with the prosecuting attorney. There's court appearances that these children will have to make. And it's a very stressful thing and creates a lot of anxiety for children. And what this program is designed to do is that we bring in a trained dog, through this canine advocacy program, which helps to reduce the anxiety for the child. The dog actually comes in and sits with the child. The child's given an opportunity to play with the dog, or sit with the dog, pet the dog, whatever, at these initial meetings with the prosecutor. Also, while they're waiting their turn to go into the court to actually get on the witness stand, the dog can be with them in the waiting room. And I've seen this firsthand, how much of an effect this can have on the child and how it soothes the child and just really reduces their anxiety. And what we're working on is trying to get the dogs actually into the courtroom so that they can actually sit with the child while the child is testifying at a jury trial, which can be a very stressful experience for everyone involved. Now, with what we've managed to do so far is we have had a dog come in and actually sit with a child while the child gave testimony in a preliminary examination, which is not the same as a jury trial. It's a sort of a pre-trial proceeding.
Yeah.
But we've got to that point so far, and we're still waiting for our first opportunity to bring the dog actually into a jury trial to sit through that.
Now, this would be a long thing for the dog to sit through, too.
It could, and these are very highly trained dogs, and where these dogs are coming from that are being used with this canine advocacy program, they're actually dogs that were being trained for leader dogs for the blind, and for whatever reason, it's usually something very small. The dog did not, say, pass the final certification for leader dogs. Perhaps it was something as small as the dog might pull on the leash too hard, or the dog wasn't good at doing stares or something to that effect. But the dog is still highly trained to be in a public building, a public setting, to sit still for a long period of time and so forth. And they make excellent dogs for this canine advocacy program.
Mm-hmm. All right, so the dog actually comes from the school?
Yes, they've been trained. They've gone through the Leader Dogs for the Blind program, which is a very stringent program. A lot of training goes in and training those dogs up for that program.
Is the dog then assigned to the court or to the county?
Well, the way it's working right now, my understanding is that around the state in various prosecutor's offices, each prosecutor's office has a victim's rights advocate that works in their office, at least one. Some have a whole office of victims rights advocates. Like in our office, we have three victims advocates in our office, and usually it's one of the people that works in that department that will actually get one of these dogs that's gone through the training, and they will have that dog as basically a personal pet of theirs.
Mm-hmm.
But that dog is trained, and when that dog is needed either in their court in their county or in another county, those advocates are willing to go to that other county or to their own county and bring the dog in for the court purposes for being with the child. And this is done at no cost. At this point, the canine advocacy program is no cost to any county that chooses to use their services.
Interesting. Very, very fast. I'm interested to see how well it'll work.
Well, I am too. Like I said, I saw it in action at a preliminary examination about a month ago here in Ottawa County. And the dog was amazing, the way it sat in the courtroom and just was right there, and actually watched the child who was testifying reach down and pet the dog as she sat on the stand, and you could just tell that it had a real calming effect on her.
Great, great. We're here with the assistant prosecutor, and if you have questions, 395 1450, our number here on Talk the Town. Have you been watching the trial that's been going on in Florida at all?
I have. You're talking about the Zimmerman trial?
Yeah.
Yes, I've been following it through the news. I have not been watching it day to day, but I have been following the news stories, yes.
A trial like this takes a lot of time for the prosecutor, doesn't it?
It does. It takes a lot of time, and you know, it's actually going to be a very tough case from the prosecutor's mm-hmm. point of view, given the fact that he's claiming he's got the self-defense claim that he's raised, and self-defense is always a tough thing to overcome when somebody raises that claim. It's a very high burden on the prosecutor to overcome that self-defense mm-hmm. claim. We have to actually prove beyond a reasonable doubt that he did not act in self-defense. And in a case like this, I think they've got their work cut out for them. I think they've got a very, very tough job mm-hmm. down there as prosecutors.
Well, we should know in a couple of days whether it's one way or the other.
We should.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. All right. All right. 395-1450 is the number here if you have a question for the assistant prosecutor this morning. And what do you work on generally, Lee?
Well, out of our office, of course, we prosecute criminal law.
Mm-hmm.
We're criminal law attorneys for the most part. I mean, we do cross over into the civil area in a few areas, but generally we're criminal law prosecutors. And what I work on, me specifically, is I'm working on gang prosecutions is one of my areas of specialty,
mm-hmm.
and also cold case homicides, which I'm currently working on one right now. And in addition to that, I carry a general load along with everyone else in the office of misdemeanor and felony caseload.
Yeah. Now, recently we had a lot of the gang members in the court. Now, did you work on that, or was that from the state court?
Well, that was actually the
federal
government that is prosecuting those. What you've seen in the media recently has been there's 31 or so people that the federal government is prosecuting. And what they're being prosecuted for federally is racketeering charges, which is organized crime
mm-hmm.
Type of crimes. And where we came into play on that, we're not actually doing those prosecutions. Those are going through the federal court. But the basis for some of those federal charges that they're charged with now go all the way back into the 90s up through the 2000s. And some of the basis for the federal charges are the prosecutions that we did here at state level through the 90s and 2000s. Those crimes are now being resurrected to become part of the charges that are being leveled against them now at the federal
mm-hmm.
system. So, yes, we do have some involvement, but as far as the actual prosecution of these current cases, we are not really involved in that. That's the federal government. We've already pretty much done our work on that, and now they're using that as the basis for these charges.
Well, it should be at least some help in cutting back on the gang crime that we have around the area, shouldn't it?
I believe it is. I believe it's been very successful at this point. Now, none of those people have come to trial yet, and of course, they're all presumed innocent until they are actually found guilty in a court of law. But just the fact that most of these people have been arrested and are in custody right now, they're not out, you know, continuing to run and continuing to conduct this gang activity has, I think, markedly slowed down the gang activity
mm-hmm.
in Holland from what I've seen. So I think it has been effective to this point.
All right, we're here with Assistant Prosecutor Lee Fisher this morning, and if you have a question, 395-1450, line is open for you. Now, as the you don't prosecute traffic cases anymore, do we?
Well, yes. If somebody takes a traffic case to a formal hearing in front of the judge, then our office does show up to represent. If it's a state statute violation, we will show up and we do prosecute and conduct the formal hearings on the traffic tickets.
Okay. And like drunk driving, is that?
No, that would be a misdemeanor charge. That's actually a criminal charge.
Okay.
As opposed to a civil infraction traffic ticket like running a stop sign or a speeding. Those would be civil infractions. The drunk driving is actually a misdemeanor charge. That's an actual criminal charge, and yes, we do prosecute those.
So if someone contests a ticket that they got, do you get in on that?
Well, the first step in contesting a ticket would be to go to an informal hearing in front of a magistrate.
Okay.
And that would be where the person that got the ticket and the police officer come into an informal hearing in front of that magistrate. And the magistrate will make a decision, either responsible or not responsible. If the person is found responsible for that violation, then they have the option of taking that case on then to a formal hearing in front of the judge. And that's where our office would come in and then represent the police officer who wrote the ticket at that hearing.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just a little bit more formal process. It's sort of a review of what the magistrate did, and then the judge will make the call at that point.
We don't have as many of those as we used to, do we?
No. You know, I rarely do a formal hearing. I myself might do maybe one formal hearing a year. Maybe our office, I would be surprised if we did more than a couple of dozen a year, probably much less than that. Most people don't take their tickets to formal hearing anymore.
Right. Most people just pay the fine.
Another great majority, if they do decide to have that informal hearing, they just go with whatever the decision is there and then pay the fine and mm-hmm. we're done. Very few make it to formal hearing anymore, in my experience.
I guess, I don't know if that's good or bad anyhow.
I've only seen a rare occasion where the judge will overrule what the magistrate decided at the formal hearing.
Yeah.
Or at the informal hearing, I'm sorry. So that's fairly rare.
And usually they won't overrule the officer.
Usually I'd say a very high percentage of cases the officer, you know, is justified in writing the ticket, and the magistrate finds in the officer's favor. I would say that's probably a very high majority of the cases. I don't know what the percentage is, but I'm sure it's fairly high.
When an officer stops me, I haven't been stopped in a long, long time, but I usually know what I did.
Yeah, most people do, and, you know, it's always best to be polite, be pleasant with the officer, and I know of many, many cases. I've had many people come up to me, and I've had experiences with people I know who the officers will just issue a warning and send people on their way, too. They don't necessarily write a ticket every time, and a lot of times they'll write a ticket for one thing when they could write a ticket for three or four, but they'll only write the one, so...
Yeah.
Our officers generally use a good deal of discretion out there on the road.
And they usually gear down a little bit on the miles per hour over the speed limit, too.
They do. That's very common, very common.
Yeah.
To knock it down to what would be lesser points that a person might get on their license and lesser fine by knocking it down a few miles per hour.
I always used to say that the officer is the first judge.
They are. So... Yeah, if you're pulled over, the best thing to do is be polite, be nice, and see what happens.
Indeed. Let's talk about the cold cases again a little bit. How much time do you spend on that usually? As much as you need to, or?
Well, that's what's nice about being assigned to that. I spend generally as much time as I need on the case, as much time as I need I'm given to spend on that case, and I actually work as part of a team. Like I said, I'm working with one of my bosses, Doug Messman, is working on the case with me. We actually have two sheriff's detectives who are part of that team, David Blakely and Venus Repper. I've also got an intern working with me. Tyler is working with me. He's an intern from Valparaiso Law School, and he's here for the summer, and he's been a great help to me. And we've got some support staff in the office who have been a great deal of help as well, and I consider them to be part of the team as well. So we have, you know, a group of maybe 5, 6, 7 people working on this case.
Mm-hmm.
I do spend a lot of time on it. So it's sort of an all-consuming type of thing when you get into one of these cases.
It's kind of a fascinating thing in a way, too, isn't it?
It really is. I mean, it is fascinating. It's the best part of my job. It's what I enjoy doing, and it's very interesting work.
But I know that case has been with us for 20 years or so.
Yeah, it was 1987.
Really?
So November of 1987, since then, the week before Thanksgiving.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And you've been, well, off and on working on it, I would imagine.
I've been working on this case since August of 2011 is when this one, for me, was reopened. The Sheriff's Department opened it up a little bit before that. And we worked on a different case before that one, the Deborah Wilson homicide that was also on the north side of Holland. And once we had brought that investigation to a conclusion, then we went into working on the Brinks case in August, in earnest, in August of 2011. So we've been working on it straight through since then.
Now, do you meet with the deputies and so on once in a while to update on where you are?
Right. I meet with the detectives usually more than once a week. We're talking on the phone. We're back and forth constantly. We have an actual meeting where we actually see each other face-to-face at least once a week, usually more than that. And we have other meetings where we meet with people, say, from the state police who are helping us out. We meet with different witnesses and victims From time to time, we have them into the office, or the detectives may go out and speak to them, or I may have them come into my office to have a meeting with me. So, yeah, there's a lot of meetings that are going on.
Yeah, I'll do that.
Talking with people, sure.
Now, when you get in a cold case like this, does someone assign this case to you, or because of your specialty or special knowledge? Or
right. Well, Ron France is the elected prosecutor, yeah. And Doug Messman is the chief assistant, and they assigned me to focus on the cold case homicides.
Mm-hmm.
That is one area that I have been specifically assigned to cover in the office. And then Doug Messman has worked along with me on this case, and we worked together on previous cold case prosecutions back from 2008 forward.
Mm-hmm.
So Doug and I have worked together on, this will be our third one that we've worked together.
I would think that it would be a most interesting sort of thing to do as a prosecutor.
Oh, it really is. It's just, it's amazing what types of things you can learn about people and human nature in general, as far as people and what people know and what people won't tell, and when people decide to come forward with information that will help crack a case open and that type of thing. It's just, it's truly very interesting, very amazing thing to witness, to see
mm-hmm.
how this all comes together.
Yeah.
Something that's been kept under wraps and quiet for so long.
I have a call coming in here. Good morning. You're online with our guest.
Yes, hi. I just got home, so I'm not even sure who you're talking to.
We're talking to Lee Fisher from the prosecutor's office.
Okay, I don't know if this has anything to do with that then. Last summer, I did get a ticket for speeding
mm-hmm.
on Ottawa Beach Road. And, you know, I, of course, paid the fine right away. And then I also got a letter that I had to take a test, which was just outrageous, the test that was page after page after page, and I had to pay $60 to take that test. Now, I'm wondering, why did I have to do that? That was the first ticket I had ever had.
Good question. Lee, do you have an answer for her?
Well, I think what you may have received and what the Secretary of State has been doing now, especially with first-time people who are first-time getting their tickets, is they're giving you a chance to keep those points from going on your license.
Well, that's what it was
right.
for.
So they want you to take that test and complete the test successfully, and that would keep the points from going on your license, which could help you possibly with keeping your insurance rates down and so forth.
Yeah, I know. But, I mean, that's the first ticket I ever had. As soon as you get a ticket, do you get points?
Yes, if it's a speeding ticket, you're going to get, generally, it's going to be at least 2 points. It depends on how fast you're going.
It was going to be 2 points.
Yeah,
right.
2 points.
Right.
So you could save that from being on your driving record, and your driving record, of course, is reviewed periodically by your insurance company, and that helps to set what insurance rates you're paying.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's probably a good idea to take that test and get those points knocked off of there.
Well, I really thought it was outrageous. The test they had was just, I don't know. If anybody else has done that, I'm sure they'd say the same thing. It was just outrageous.
We'd remember, I'm sure.
I haven't actually seen the actual test itself. I have not seen it or taken it.
It did it over the computer because, well, you couldn't take the test in Holland any place. You either had to go to Muskegon or Grand Rapids, I
mm-hmm.
think. So chose to do it over the computer. But anyhow, I thought it was just outrageous and really uncalled for because
Thank you for your call, anyhow. Thank you.
Thank you.
And we're out of time. Thank you very much, Lee, for being our guest this morning here.